Welcome to the reading of the Sunday, June 27th, Cedar Rapids Gazette. I'm your reader, Chris Klein. Now let's turn to the weather. Today is mostly cloudy with wind out of the west at 9 miles per hour. Cedar Rapids high of 81, low of 64. Iowa City high of 82, low of 65. The rest of the week is similar to those temperatures, but isolated thunderstorms are mentioned for every day, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Now we turn to the local news. The leading article on the front page today is titled, "Without Body Cameras, State Patrol an Outlier." Troopers lag behind scores of Iowa law enforcement agencies. This piece is written by Aaron Jordan for the Gazette. Iowa State Patrol troopers, who stop more than 150,000 motorists a year, provide security at the state capitol and staff high-profile events including RAGBRAI. Don't wear body cameras. The deficiency was obvious after an April 8th protest at the Capitol when troopers arrested a black high school student on allegations she assaulted an officer. Although there were many troopers present at the protest, none of them got video of the alleged assault. And in a bystander cell phone video made public afterward, the alleged crime, a push to the trooper's elbow, is just off screen. "We saw the whole thing," said Angelina Ramirez, a co-college student who organized the rally against Back the Blue legislation that increased qualified immunity for law enforcement officers and raised the penalties for rioting. Senate File 342 was signed into law earlier this month. "It literally looked like they accidentally bumped arms," Ramirez said about the contact between Josie Mulvihill of Des Moines and Trooper Dylan Hernandez at the Capitol. "It escalated when he arrested her and threw her to the ground." Mulvihill, a 2021 Norwalk High School graduate, is scheduled for a non-jury trial August 16th on the serious misdemeanor charge, punishable by up to 1 year in jail. The State Patrol also did not have body camera video of the April 9th fatal shooting of State Patrol Sergeant Jim Smith during a standoff in Grundy Center. Other agencies that responded to the incident do have body cameras, but have declined to make video public during the pending criminal case of Michael Thomas Lang, charged with first-degree murder. Body cameras, recording devices officers wear on their uniforms to document what they see and hear on the job, were used by about half of U.S. law enforcement agencies in 2016, the U.S. Department of Justice reported in 2018. About 90% of over 200 Iowa law enforcement agencies that responded to a survey last fall about body camera use said their agencies had the cameras. The survey was part of the In Focus series by the Iowa Newspaper Association and more than 30 Iowa newspapers, including the Gazette, that examines the use of police body cameras and access to police video in Iowa. This is the third article in that series. Iowa law enforcement officers told In Focus reporters they like body cameras because citizens behave better if they know their actions are being recorded. Studies show use of force incidents and citizen complaints against officers drop dramatically when officers are wearing cameras. Video enhances criminal prosecution of cases and now is expected by many juries, prosecutors said. So why has the Iowa State Patrol not adopted them? When it comes to body-worn cameras, it's not as simple as buying the actual BWCs, Sergeant Alex Dinkla wrote in an email response. The BWCs themselves are somewhat affordable, but the infrastructure to support them is expensive and complicated. The state patrols 360 troopers, of which 267 are assigned solely to road duty, work across the state and had in-car dashboard cameras installed in the 1990s, along with audio recorders on their uniforms. But adding body video cameras would require a mobile router in each squad car for downloading video, Dinkla said. Our troopers report to work from their residence. Some live 2 hours from a district office, and having a Wi-Fi option is the only alternative to be able to download these videos, he wrote. Unfortunately, connectivity throughout the entire state in rural areas is still not 100%. Finally, there will be the increased storage of the added video as we already support our in-car video systems. Dinkla and Debbie McClung, the Iowa Department of Public Safety spokeswoman, did not respond to questions about potential plans to buy body cameras. But when reporters filed an open records request for any documents concerning use of body cameras by the state patrol, McClung provided a budget request for fiscal 2022 and fiscal 2023, asking the Iowa legislature to approve $3.55 million to equip all troopers with body cameras. Continuing without the addition of a body-worn camera is irresponsible when considering both the expectations of our society as well as the safety and security of our state troopers and those they serve, states the budget narrative, which includes the name of Colonel Nathan Falk, the state patrol chief, as submitter. The narrative says the technology state patrol uses to record audio is limited and subject to interference and often results in inaudible recordings. By adding body cameras, transparency with citizens will be improved, liability will be reduced, and the professionalism our state troopers strive to embody each and every day will be amplified, the narrative states. The request was prepared in October. McClung said the proposal was submitted to Governor Kim Reynolds' staff as a request for fiscal 2023. The Department of Public Safety chose not to present the request to a committee during the 2021 legislative session, she said. Falk did not return an email seeking information about the proposal. The State Patrol got an estimate for $2.55 million from Sierra Wireless, a Canadian company that provides, among other services, secure connections from law enforcement vehicles. The largest line items are $336,500 for 400 body cameras, $547,000 for 400 vehicle routers, $187,000 for body camera software licensing, and $183,000 for 800 vehicle antenna. Another email provided through the records request shows a $320,000 estimate for data storage equipment. The Des Moines Police Department spent $1.6 million in 2017 to outfit about 300 officers with body cameras. Representative Jared Klein, Republican of Keota, who chairs the Iowa House Public Safety Committee, said he hadn't seen the request, but generally favors law enforcement using body cameras. I'm supportive of the funding to go forward for body cameras, he said. It is a valuable tool for the officers, the community. Representative Wes Breckenridge, Democrat of Newton, who worked for the Newton Police Department for 24 years, said he would have liked to have his interactions with the public recorded, but this agency didn't get body cameras until after he retired in 2017. 9 times out of 10, the camera will help the officer to the extent that what they're saying, what they're doing, is what happened, he said. Klein said he would like to see the policies State Patrol puts in place regarding when video must be recorded and whether and when the public can access the video. The InFocus review found nearly half the 200 agencies that responded to last fall's survey identified video as a public record, but many chiefs and sheriffs have declined to release video, even in closed investigations and even when the person shown in the video wants it to be public. Iowa Department of Corrections Director Beth Skinner has said her agency will expand use of body cameras at Iowa's 9 prisons after 2 officers at the Anamosa State Penitentiary were accused of bludgeoning to death a correctional officer and a nurse March 23rd. Before the attack, only some staff at the Anamosa Prison and the Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison have worn cameras, but with some of the $10 million in discretionary money provided by the Iowa legislature, the Corrections Department will provide body cameras to staff in specific positions at all 9 institutions, spokesman Cord Overton said. Body-worn camera recordings can be key in situations where the core facts of what occurred are in dispute, but cameras don't help if officers don't turn them on. In the widely publicized arrest last year of Des Moines Register reporter Andrea May Sahori, who was charged with failure to disperse and interference with official acts while she was reporting on racial justice protests, Sahori said she was complying with police orders, but a police officer alleged that she tried to pull away from the officer with the help of her boyfriend. The officer had not activated his body camera in violation of his department's policies. That camera model is constantly recording so that when an officer presses the record button, the previous 30 seconds of footage is retained. The department had the capability to recover the video footage of Sahori's arrest from the officer's camera later, but didn't. A jury acquitted Sahori of the charges in March. Most police department and sheriff's office policies instruct their officers when to activate their body-worn cameras, according to the InFocus review. Often officers are instructed to record all their interactions with the public unless there are privacy concerns, such as recording inside a person's home. Few, if any, agency policies in Iowa spell out repercussions for officers who don't turn on their cameras when they should. New technology would remove some of that discretion, with cameras activating as soon as emergency lights turn on, a gun is drawn, or a taser is powered up. A new system by Axon, AXON, has the capability to live stream the officer's interaction with supervisors or dispatch staff, which could provide backup or a second opinion in fraught moments, the Washington Post reported. Last July, a Shenandoah police officer who pursued a man on a bicycle and allegedly struck the man with the side of his patrol vehicle to end the chase failed to activate his body camera to record the arrest. The officer did not have time to initiate his camera as the arrest occurred very quickly once he exited his vehicle, Shenandoah Assistant Police Chief Thomas Johnson said in response to a request for video of the incident. The arrested man, Toby James Pritchett, age 26, of Shenandoah, told InFocus he was knocked from his bicycle, which was run over by the patrol vehicle, and that the officer tackled him and pressed his knees into Pritchett's neck and back. "I kept telling him I can't breathe," Pritchett said. "I almost started blacking out because he had his knee on my neck." Officer Dustin Terry resigned 4 days later. Without body camera video, Pritchett's claims about how he was detained on the ground would be difficult to substantiate. The patrol vehicle's camera recorded part of the incident, but the department declined to release the video because Johnson said the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy is investigating. The academy handles the certification and decertification of Iowa officers. Johnson also said his department's internal investigation could lead to criminal charges. The department has declined to release further details of what led to Terry's resignation. If Iowa lawmakers want agencies to use body cameras, they could do what 7 other states, Colorado, Connecticut, Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, New Mexico, and South Carolina, have done by requiring law enforcement agencies to equip officers with the cameras. Most of the laws came after May 2020 when protests flared across the country over the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis Police Department custody, the National Conference of state legislatures reported. Ramirez, the co-student who worked as a legislative aide to State Senator Rob Hoag, Democrat of Cedar Rapids, said without video recordings, Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin may not have been convicted in Floyd's death. Another reason she supports the state patrol adding body cameras is because it would set the record straight when there are questions about what happens at future protests. Her group has been accused of rioting at the state capitol when it had a permit for the event, and besides Melville Hill's arrest, there were no other criminal charges or property damage. Body camera footage, especially in a place like the Capitol where protests occur, is important to show this is what is true, this is what is false, she said. Be able to protect those protesters from disinformation. The next front page article is Most Virus Patients in Hospitals Didn't Get Vaccine. Iowa healthcare systems won't be overwhelmed, but variants still pose risk. This is written by Michaela Ram for the Gazette. Corridor hospitals have seen none to very few COVID-19 admissions of vaccinated patients since the shots have become widely available, proving to local health care providers the vaccine is effective in preventing serious illness and death. But unvaccinated patients still are experiencing severe symptoms from the coronavirus, in some cases even requiring a life support machine to help them breathe. While the vaccination rate locally means hospital officials no longer are worried a surge in new cases could overwhelm their healthcare systems, one hospital official said more infectious virus variants making their way into the state still pose a big threat to the community as a whole. The trends we are seeing reinforce the importance of getting the vaccine, said Dr. Tony Myers, Mercy Medical Center Chief Medical Officer. Though improved, I am concerned with the sustained low level of community spread of the virus and the anticipated increase with new variants. Since vaccines became available to the general public in March, Mercy Medical Center has reported no fully vaccinated people being admitted to the hospitals for COVID-19. Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids has had one vaccinated patient who had underlying health conditions, according to spokeswoman Sarah Carrizo. Beyond that, only people who are not immunized have been hospitalized as a result of the virus. The state's largest hospital has seen a similar trend, officials there say. Most patients hospitalized with COVID-19 at the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics in recent weeks were not fully vaccinated. Between April 1st and June 23rd, UIHC had more than 200 hospitalized patients with a COVID-19 diagnosis at some time during their stay. Of that, about 85% had no record of vaccination, according to a rough analysis conducted by UIHC epidemiologists. About 6% had one dose recorded, and about 8% had two doses of the vaccine. Vaccine distribution also has resulted in a significant drop in COVID-19 hospitalizations in general, local hospital officials report. And as hospitalization rates have declined recently, so has the tally for how many individuals have been placed on ventilators and the number of coronavirus-related deaths locally. St. Luke's has seen a steady decline in total monthly COVID-19 patients since January, when the hospital reported 76 total hospitalizations. By May, the total number of patients was 48. At Mercy, Myers said, it's been some time since the hospital has consistently had 10 or more COVID patients at one time. Mercy has also celebrated a significant milestone this past week, when the hospital had zero patients in the hospital related to the virus. That's the first time since the pandemic began, since we admitted the first COVID-19 patient, Myers noted. Earlier this year, health system officials saw a significant difference in infection rates between vaccinated and unvaccinated healthcare staff as soon as 2 weeks after the first doses were administered. By the fourth week out, infections reached a near-zero rate of increase among vaccinated staff. As of Saturday, just over 51% of Linn County's total population is fully vaccinated, including 64.2% of residents 16 and older. The majority of the county's older residents are vaccinated, Meyer said, meaning most hospitalized patients' ages have ranged from 30 to 50 years. Despite their younger age, these patients experience a very similar severity of illness when they are admitted to the hospital and still are placed on ventilators as often as older patients, Myers said. However, younger patients are more likely to recover. We continue to have deaths, but at a much lower number, he said. While local hospitals no longer appear to be at risk of being overwhelmed, health officials said the virus still poses a serious risk to the community, particularly as vaccine distribution has significantly dropped in recent weeks. Some county public health departments have even said reaching herd immunity, or at least a 70% vaccination rate, could be out of reach for their communities. Just over 45% of Iowa's population was fully vaccinated against the coronavirus as of Saturday. The Delta variant, which has been identified as a variant of concern by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, was detected by state public health officials in Jefferson County this past month. It's believed to be the most transmissible variant yet, experts say. Local officials are concerned this new highly transmissible variant could spread rapidly through the area's unvaccinated population. The number of people who are vaccinated in Linn County will prevent a return to previous levels of illness, but we are far from being rid of COVID-19, Dr. Dustin Arnold, St. Luke's chief medical officer, said in a statement. Local health officials are continuing to encourage their patients to get the shot. The Linn County Public Health also is continuing its outreach efforts to county residents, including offering free Johnson & Johnson vaccines at the Linn County Fair this weekend. The next short piece, Woman Shot, Injured at Marion Apartment. This is written for the Gazette. Marion. A woman was shot in the leg early Saturday at an apartment complex in Southeast Marion, police said. Marion police officers responding to a call about a loud noise at an apartment complex on Chapel Ridge Circle at 4:26 a.m. learned that a woman had been shot in the leg, according to a news release from the police department. When police arrived, the woman had already been taken to a hospital. The woman, who was not identified by police, was treated for injuries that weren't life-threatening, the release said. Police are investigating and ask that anyone with information contact the police department at 319-377-1511. Now, turning to the insight section and community letters. There's a few. Let's pray for people behind the badge. This is submitted by Louis Stepanek of Cedar Rapids. Currently, police officers are being identified by many as bad guys, so it's time to take a look at just what they are expected to do to keep us all safe. He or she must stay in top physical condition, be able to recite the Miranda warnings in their sleep, detain, investigate, search, and arrest a gang member on the street in less time than it takes five learned judges to debate the legality of the stop. Officers have to deal with crime scenes, cokes, a confession from a child abuser, comfort a murder victim's family, and show the media that law enforcement isn't insensitive to the rights of criminal suspects. Officers may sit in a squad car for hours at night on a stakeout, collect a homicide canvas for witnesses, then testify in court the next day. Placing a 250-pound drunk in a patrol car without incident, entering a dwelling a health inspector wouldn't touch, determine the bulge in the pocket of a suspect, assist a bleeding victim saying, "You'll be all right," when they know differently. Law enforcement officers make mistakes. But so do we. We need to pray for our officers. Again, this was submitted by Louis Stepanek of Cedar Rapids. The next letter is written by Dave Bradley of West Liberty. Iowa GOP delegation opposes voting rights. Iowa Republican Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst voted to make it harder for Americans to vote the procedural test vote S1 for the People Act, would reform voting rights with the aim to make it easier and more accessible for Americans to vote. A few proposed features of S1 include same-day voter registration, early voting beginning 15 days prior to Election Day with expanded hours. More importantly, a polling place must be located within walking distance on a public transportation route. We cannot keep America great if our legislators, elected by the people, refuse to make it easier for Americans to vote. U.S. Representatives Ashley Hinson, Marionette Miller-Meeks, and Randy Feenstra, as state lawmakers, voted to prohibit the Iowa Secretary of State from mailing absentee ballot request forms to registered Iowa voters. Worse, all three voted by early absentee ballot in the June 2020 primary before voting to end it. You really can't make this stuff up. Their tenure in the Iowa legislature served as a prelude to their U.S. House vote, as Hinson, Miller-Meeks, and Feenstra voted against the House equivalent of For the People Act on final passage in March. All five of our elected members of the U.S. Congress are working against their constituents. Again, this was written by Dave Bradley of West Liberty. The next letter is, we need to return to civil discourse, submitted by Kristen Beatty of North Liberty. I was dismayed to read Todd Dorman's May 30th piece regarding the criticism of his column. The opinion section of the paper should be a place to read a variety of ideas. I don't always agree with those columnists I read, but a variety of opinions is the whole point. If I continually disagree with the view of a columnist, I may choose to not read that column. I can express my disagreement with my friends, or write to the editor, or write to the columnist. But what gives anyone the right to be mean and disparaging of another's work? Everyone, including a columnist, is entitled to express an opinion without being attacked. As a country, we need to return to civil discourse and polite disagreement. It needs to start here in Iowa. Again, this is written by Kristen Beatty of North Liberty. The next letter is Leon Schindler's from Cedar Rapids. Why do motorists hate cyclists? As a cyclist, I regularly see reasons motorists don't like us. Too many cyclists either have no idea about the rules they should follow or just choose not to. Bicycles are vehicles and need to follow traffic laws if they are on public streets or roads. I take the center of a lane at four-way stops and follow the standard rules of right of way. I signal turns. I do not ride on sidewalks in town. I saw a group of a dozen bikes blow through a stop sign in Newbo recently. When I mentioned it, they just laughed and shrugged at me. The group was all adults in their 30s at my estimate, not small children that might not know better. As long as we have people with no respect for others riding bicycles, the entire group loses respect. I also strongly advocate mirrors for any bike that will be on public roads, streets, or even the trails. Of course, I'm still waiting for a lot more courtesy on the local trails, too, so sometimes my hopes are pretty out there. That was written by Leon Schindler of Cedar Rapids. The final letter was written by Nina Bapp of Cedar Rapids. Republicans should follow Lincoln McCain. The Republican Party is the party of Lincoln, our president who issued the Emancipation Proclamation. Governor Robert Ray was our Republican governor who challenged Iowans to welcome Vietnam refugees, and we did. John McCain was a Republican senator who served with honor and distinction in the military and worked hard for campaign finance reform. Now come the Trumpers. They are mean-spirited and tell lies. My hope is that Republicans will reject their bad behavior. And again, that was submitted by Nina Bapp of Cedar Rapids. And now we have time for one op-ed piece by Todd Dorman in the Insight and Book section. Todd Dorman hates everything. This is not the title of my forthcoming autobiography, but rather a Facebook comment on last Sunday's column, Come Feel Free Again in Red State, Iowa. You might recall, in response to Governor Kim Reynolds' plan to use COVID relief funding to launch an ad campaign promoting Iowa, I whipped up a couple of my own concepts. I used a touch of satire to point out many of the things our Republican-run statehouse has wrought that aren't exactly welcoming. Although I don't hate everything, I am pretty salty about Iowa's political direction. I care deeply about my native land, so I use my small megaphone to register my objections. That rankles a lot of people. So be it. I'm not staying quiet. Fortunately, most readers who chimed in agreed with my take. Totally captivating, totally educational, totally brilliant, totally accurate, totally scary, wrote a reader who came to Iowa from Pennsylvania in 1971, when the Republican Party was very different from what it is now. We avoid talking politics with anyone but family. The odds of Iowa changing during my lifetime are slim to none, unquote. My first thought keeps evolving. What the hell has happened to the beautiful state I so dearly love? Your column of June 20th pretty much sums it up, wrote a reader who lived in Iowa for 58 years, moved to Colorado for 13 years, and returned in May of 2020. I am sure people consider themselves Iowa nice, but I can't for the life of me understand how Kim Reynolds is tolerated as governor and how politicians, namely Republicans, have shut out us voters from public comment and access to decision-making, the reader wrote. Some readers I heard from have left Iowa. Quote, I am one of the large cohort of young former Iowans who have the means to go somewhere better. The fact Iowa needs useless, expensive adverts to attract people to the state is in itself proof of the problems Republicans have created for themselves, a reader argued. One reader left years ago and hoped to return. Quote, once again, you hit it out of the park, he wrote. I left Iowa 40 years ago. I still have family living in Cedar Rapids. I visit them and the state regularly. I no longer recognize the Iowa I left. It has become hateful and ignorant. What happened? Quote, I was planning on retiring back to Iowa for the quality of life, smart people with progressive ideas, low housing costs, negligible crime, and exceptional health care. Not anymore, he wrote. Of course, some did not like my marketing pitches. Quote, it must really suck to be you, a reader wrote. Nothing is ever good. It is so easy to blame and to find fault. It wouldn't hurt you if you decided to compliment someone who you disagree with politically. Covering politics and the legislature for many years, I've met many Republicans I respected and some I admired, even if I disagreed with their politics. I had a good working relationship with GOP lawmakers who didn't duck interviews or constantly heap scorn on the media. Unfortunately, very few of them are still involved in politics. I have a deal for you, another reader wrote. In your next Sunday Insight column, list 10 things you actually think are nice about living in Cedar Rapids. If you can do that, I will send you $10 via check. My column wasn't really aimed at Cedar Rapids, and I actually live in Marion. But this is pretty easy. 5 seasons, 5 smells. You can keep the $10. One reader said he enjoyed the column, but fibbed. The reason I enjoyed it so much is because it was such a great representation of how liberal ideologues like yourself in the media has such a gross disregard for facts, wrote the reader, who is excited to be moving from Illinois to red state Iowa. What followed was a very long note criticizing the liberal media, critical race theory, and liberal hacks such as myself. He praised Reynolds, pandemic response, our budget surplus, etc. I cannot wait to relocate from this blue disgrace of a state that is Illinois and arrive in the great state of Iowa. Did I mention he's moving to Iowa City? A reader also asked me why I stayed in the first place. This is a question I've been thinking about. There were moments that seemed to matter, stuck in my aging mind. There was the night after high school graduation when I stood on a gravel road with some friends drinking, pop. Lightning filled the western sky, and the outflow winds from the storms swept across the fields and cooled the muggy air. I closed my eyes and thought, this is where I want to live. Might have been the pop talking. When I was a page in the Iowa House in 1989, I watched lawmakers debate and pass a bill adding sexual orientation to the state civil rights code decades before other states took up the issue. Representative Tom Jochim, a Catholic Democrat from Dubuque, stood to voice eloquent support for the bill, and the House fell silent. It passed but failed in the Senate. We lost Jochim last year. When I returned to the Capitol as a reporter 9 years later, the friction of opposing viewpoints and partisanship certainly existed, but it often yielded reasonable, durable compromises, even with the GOP holding the coveted trifecta. It was a brand of politics I thought I understood until our red state trailblazers fired up the bulldozers in recent years. Watching young Iowans bound out of Iowa Judicial Building on a sunny afternoon morning, waving the Varnum decision over their heads is a sight I won't forget. Maybe it was our wedding at the Church of the Land at Living History Farms on a gorgeous September day or an October morning trout fishing beneath a tree canopy covered in frost. Good schools for our kids certainly factored in, and I don't want to live anywhere that a white Christmas isn't at least a possibility. So many moments that pulled us in and kept us here. Why did we stay? When should we go? For now, the right answer is stay and be heard. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Sunday, June 27th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. A memorial service will be held for Joby and Patricia Atwater at 1 p.m. Monday, June 28th at Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories. Inurnment, private, at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. Rebecca Robertson will officiate. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home is in charge of the arrangements. Julie Lynn Hansen, 63, of Cedar Rapids. Her family will greet friends from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, June 28th at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion. A memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, June 29th at Murdoch Funeral Home with inurnment to follow at Oakshade Cemetery in Marion. Kelly Michael Howey, 40, of Cedar Rapids, lost his battle with addiction earlier this month. He was born in and spent most of his life in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. A private memorial service was held for close family and friends. Shirley Omar, age 94, of Cedar Rapids, died peacefully in her sleep at Hiawatha Care Center on June 24th during a nice rain. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday, June 27th at Cedar Memorial Chapel Stateroom. Funeral services will be held at 3 p.m. Monday, June 28th at Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories. King Jr. Browning, 86, of Marion, passed away peacefully at his home with his daughter by his side on Tuesday, June 22nd. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, July 1st, at Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. Funeral services from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday, July 2nd, at the New Life Outreach Worship Center, 3342nd Street Northeast, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Burial will follow at Oak Hill Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Dorrance V. Holub, age 86, of Cogan, passed away at home on June 24th. A vigil service will be held at 4 p.m. Monday, June 28th at the Monte Community Center at 2854 Washington Avenue in rural Cogan, conducted by the Reverend Beckman. Visitation will follow from 4:30 to 8 p.m. Monday at the Monte Community Center. A funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, June 29th at St. Patrick's Catholic Church of Monte in rural Cogan, conducted by the Reverend Ninehouse. Burial will follow at St. Patrick's Cemetery in Monte. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service at Marion is assisting the family. Dean Allen Winteroud, age 74, of Cedar Rapids, passed away June 21st at Manor Care in Cedar Rapids. A visitation will be held from noon to 2 p.m. at the Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories on Tuesday, June 29th. A funeral service will follow the visitation and begin at 2 p.m., burial following at the Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. Edward Ed Coleman, age 70, of Walker, lost his battle with cancer on Thursday, June 17th at the Dennis and Donna Oldorp Hospice, House of Mercy in Hiawatha. Per wishes, he has been cremated and will be laid to rest in Munster, Texas at a later date. An informal memorial gathering will take place from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Saturday, July 3rd at the Monte Community Center in Buchanan County, 2854 Washington Avenue, Cogan. The family will be remembering Roberta Coleman, Ed's mother, as well. Gloria Mae McCord passed away on Tuesday, June 22nd, at the age of 95. A private family graveside service was held on Friday, June 25th, at Riverside Cemetery in Anamosa, Iowa. Cards may be sent to Sharon's home at 1719 Brookdale Avenue, Northeast, Cedar Rapids, 52402. Terry Terrence Lesmeyer, age 70, of Mount Vernon, passed away Thursday, March 18th at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, Iowa City. Memorial Mass, 11 a.m. Friday, July 2nd at St. John the Baptist Catholic Church. Gathering of family and friends, 4 to 9 p.m. Friday at Maggie's home. Arrangements by Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services of Mount Vernon. Jane Keevers Goldwood Copping, age 88, of South Haven, Michigan, passed away Sunday, June 20th at Spectrum Health Blodgett Hospital in Grand Rapids. Visitation will take place from 2 to 3 p.m. Wednesday, June 30th at Peace Evangelical Lutheran Church, Blue Star Highway, South Haven, Michigan. Memorial services will follow at 3 p.m. with the Reverend Kurt Stinson and Pastor Craig Massey officiating. Eleanor Joan Nay Hayes Kaiser, age 87, passed away peacefully on Thursday, June 24th at the Vinton Lutheran Home. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, July 3rd at Wesley United Methodist Church in Vinton, with the Reverend Brian Channel officiating. Interment will be held at Evergreen Cemetery in Vinton. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Friday at the Phillips Funeral Home, 212 East 6th Street in Vinton. A memorial fund has been established. And finally, Benjamin Ben Joseph Huber, age 81, of Monticello, passed away on Monday, June 14th. At Monticello Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Monticello. In agreement with his wishes, cremation has taken place. A funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, June 30th, at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Prairieburg, Iowa, where the family and friends will greet the family 1 hour prior to the mass. And now, turning to sports. This article is submitted to the Gazette by Leah Vaughn. Iowa football. Petras taking command at quarterback. Second-year starter blocking out noise. When junior quarterback Spencer Petras addressed the media this past spring, he said he didn't care what the fans thought. He's going to get better. No offense to the fans, but I could not care less about what they have to say about our performance, Petras said in April. I'm focused on improving and having a great spring. Like any young quarterback, he's under a microscope, but this year he has more time to prepare for his second season as leader of Iowa's offense. I will say his timing is better, his leadership is better, accuracy is better, junior wide receiver Tyrone Tracy Jr. said Tuesday. Last year he was kind of timid. He really didn't command the field, but I feel like this year he's definitely gaining the respect of his teammates. He's one of the hardest workers, so I feel like that's another way he's going to gain a lot of respect. Tracy added that Petras, who has been passing to him 3 or 4 times a week during the past 3 weeks of summer conditioning, and as the new leader of the wide receiving corps, has focused his energy on strengthening that chemistry off the field. Part of that, senior wide receiver Nico Reganey adds, is taking advantage of the communication they didn't have last off season. Sometimes routes don't look the way he wants them to look, and we talk about it, Reganey said. It helps just knowing what each other wants and how to get the ball. The biggest concern with Petras last season was his completion percentage, which stood at number 9 in the Big Ten at 57.1%, his passing efficiency, quarterback rating of 119, being number 10. The Hawkeyes dropped their first two contests en route to a 6-2 season when Petras stepped into position with little offense, with little off-season training. He definitely got put in a strange season for sure, senior offensive lineman Kyler Schott said. He's the first one in the building, last one out, so he sets the bar at what everyone looks up to and what it takes to get to that first string position. The game against Northwestern on October 31st was among his worst, tallying 3 interceptions, a passer rating of 82.9%, and completing only 52% of his passes. His best games came at the back end of the season in December, notably against Illinois, where Petras completed 64.3% of his passes for 220 yards and 3 touchdowns, receiving his highest quarterback rating of the season at 165.6, his second best being against Wisconsin the following week. In the spring, Iowa offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz said that striving for accuracy on deep passes can hinder an offense from advancing downfield. That means focusing on passing in flats on the perimeter of the defense where there aren't any defenders. I think what he tried to stress with Spencer, Petras, and all our other quarterbacks is in the opportunities we have to place that ball and extend plays for the receiver. We need to do that, Brian Ferentz said. But fans were thirsty for glimpse of other options at the open practices, like sophomore quarterback Alex Padilla or redshirt freshman Deuce Hogan. Iowa quarterbacks coach Ken O'Keefe said at the beginning of the spring that there was a true quarterback competition, even though Petras had the edge because of his experience. He commended Padilla's quick feet and Hogan's deep ball accuracy, but by the end of spring and at the news conference Tuesday, Iowa head coach Kirk Ferentz seemed firm on Petras as the starter. We're going to keep an open mind for every position, but Spencer clearly has that experience, Ferentz said on Tuesday. He did a good job through spring practice, start to finish. Probably the real story is the other two guys. Alex was not doing well. He flatlined for the first 2 weeks, and then that last half, he looked a lot more comfortable. The consensus from the players was that Petras has the undisputed command in the locker room and on the field this off season. I've never seen someone watch as much film and study the game like he does, Reganey said. I have all faith in him and know that he'll continue to grow as he experiences more. Next is a piece by Mike Hyas for the Gazette. Iowa's Tracy, NIL is so huge. Hawkeye receiver says players have lost out on opportunities. Iowa City. Iowa wide receiver Tyrone Tracy Jr. knows he's been deprived of his rights as a U.S. citizen. He has 9 allies in the U.S. Supreme Court. Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate, just as Brett Kavanaugh wrote last week in the court's unanimous opinion in antitrust case NCAA versus Alston. And under ordinary principles of antitrust law, it is not evident why college sports should be any different. The NCAA is not above the law. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. Kavanaugh added, the current NCAA model is suppressing the pay of student athletes who collectively generate billions of dollars in revenues for colleges every year. It's not if, it's when, and the when is very soon. Rights for college athletes to make money off their names, images, and likenesses are coming fast. For some, it's July 1st. It may come as soon as that, even in Iowa, despite our state legislator letting an NIL bill die this spring. Wrong side of history, Iowa politicos. Tracy's a junior who would do well for himself if he had NIL rights this year. He's a dynamic player who said in no uncertain terms Tuesday he wanted to be the Big Ten's top receiver and Iowa's first 1,000-yard receiver in the last 10 years. He also knows the chance to make some money off his own name may be his before his college career is over. The reason I'm on board is I feel in college a lot of people's names are bigger than when they're out of college, Tracy said. So I feel like if you can make money right now, you should be able to because your next step when you get out of college, you don't know what's going to happen. For those who think Iowa could lose allure with recruits if NIL opportunities were a factor in their college choices, you may want to think again. In Iowa, we're basically the pro team, Tracy said. So if we throw a camp or something, there's basically going to be a lot of people there. I feel like with them taking that away from us, that is something that's not good. With the ability to get paid for holding a football camp or an autograph session, Tracy said, it will be a positive impact overall. If you can get some type of income from it, that's why this is so huge. Because for so long, there's been so many good names to come from Iowa, come from Oklahoma or Alabama, everywhere. I feel like every year there are people that lose out on opportunities. This is literally a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a lot of people that don't come from a lot of money back home. This money can help their families back home. Some people don't understand that. Nobody goes to a play to watch a stage manager. No one goes to a concert to watch people run the lights and sound. No one goes to a game to watch coaches coach and administrators administrate. The players are the show. This isn't about them getting paid by the university. This is about being able to cash in on their own, even if it's sometimes in dribs and drabs. It's about being able to join the rest of the nation in free enterprise. Athletics departments and coaching staffs already have begun to accept it and deal with it. I think most of us will be learning as we go, said Iowa coach Kirk Ferentz. It also appears most of us are going to be partnering up with experts. Some smart people on the outside have seen this coming and maybe capitalized on an opportunity. I know, in my case, and probably our coaching staff's case, we're really leaning on people who do understand the ins and outs of this. A company called Open Doors has deals with many universities, including several from the Big Ten, to help college athletes capitalize on their own names, images, and likenesses. Every athletics department will be on board, whether happily or not, and Iowa took the plunge Friday. Oh, here's something warm to close this on for Hawkeye fans. Right now, we're just focused on football, Tracy said. I don't want to lose sight of the big picture. The final article for today is titled College Athletics, Alston, NIL, and Iowa Schools. Iowa, you and I, both bracing for and embracing the new world in athletics. This is written by John Stepp for the Gazette. Between the U.S. Supreme Court allowing collegiate athletes to receive more educational benefits and upcoming rules letting athletes profit off their name, image, and likeness, many questions loom about their impact on Iowa, Iowa State, and Northern Iowa. Here are some answers. What did the Alston case decide? The answer? The U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled in NCAA versus Alston that the NCAA's restrictions on educational benefits for athletes violated federal antitrust laws. Now college athletes can receive up to $5,980 in educational benefits from their school and complete paid internships. Question, why $5,980? The answer, The 5,980 number matches how much athletes can receive for athletic achievement through items like championship rings or trophies. Joshua Gordon, a senior instructor of sports business at the University of Oregon, said he doesn't view the $5,980 as permanent, though. "I would expect change to come," Gordon said. "My sense is they gave them some instructions so that they could go back to a lower court to get further clarification on some details." Question: when do Alston changes go into effect? The answer: the ruling is effective immediately. However, it may take time for athletic departments to determine how to best offer educational benefits to its athletes. UNI Athletics Director David Harris said Tuesday it's yet to be seen how UNI will react to the new benefits. "That's something that we're going to continue to evaluate here in the coming months," Harris told the Gazette. Iowa football coach Kirk Ferentz told the Gazette on Monday, "There's a lot of ambiguity right now following the Alston decision." And finally, which schools are most likely to benefit from the Alston changes? It's unclear which specific schools will benefit the most yet, but Gordon said certain traits will set some athletic departments apart from others. "If you're somebody that has resources, one approach might be to outspend everyone," Gordon said. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Sunday, June 27th. I'm your reader, Chris Klein. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.